Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. Thank you.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks, African American Family Room Forum. We hope that you're enjoying this weekend, and we are bringing this program to you this evening, hoping that those of you who are listening via the internet will join us to participate in our conversation this evening. If you would like to participate, then just call the number 657-383-0671. That's 653-383-0671. This is your host, Marshall Washington Kevin Abui, the senior great-grandson of the Honorable Booker T. Washington. And we're happy to be able to host this program tonight. As we mentioned, it is an African-American family room forum where we can get together in a virtual telephonic or internet family room and think about and discuss topics that are of interest to our community. Tonight's topic is this: what can we, the citizens of this great democratic republic, do to prevent World War III as we commemorate the end of World War I tomorrow, which was erroneously called the war to end all wars. Before we begin our conversation, I'd just like to give a little background to our listeners concerning this war that we will celebrate the 100th anniversary of the end of it tomorrow. It was actually ended on November 11th, 1918. So here's a little background about it. In June 1914, a Serbian, Serbia, of course, is over in the Balkans, in the area where a great deal of fighting took place about 20 years ago during the Bill Clinton administration. But in 1914, in June of 1914, a Serbian nationalist assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand, heir to the throne of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, in Sarajevo, this deed set in motion a chain of events that plunged Europe into the most devastating war the world had ever seen. In the years before 1914, European nations had engaged in a scramble to obtain colonial possessions overseas and had constructed a shifting series of alliances seeking military domination within Europe. Within a little more than a month, because of the European powers interlocking military alliances, Britain, France, Russia, and Japan, known as the Allies, found themselves at war with the Central Powers, Germany, Austria, Hungary, and the Ottoman Empire, whose holdings included modern-day Turkey and much of the Middle East. German forces quickly overran Belgium and part of northern France. The war then settled into a prolonged stalemate with bloody and decisive battles succeeding one another. New military technologies, including submarines, airplanes, machine guns, tanks, and poison gas, produced unprecedented slaughter. In 1 5-month battle at Verdun in 1916, 600,000 French and German soldiers perished. Nearly as many deaths in the entire American Civil War. By the time the war ended, an estimated 10 million soldiers and uncounted millions of civilians had perished. The Great War, or World War One, and as I mentioned in the opening, which was erroneously called the war to end all wars, dealt a severe blow to the optimism and self-confidence of Western civilization. For decades, philosophers, reformers, and politicians had hailed the triumph of reason and human progress, an outlook hard to reconcile with the mass slaughter of World War One. And so we'll stop right there. We just wanted to give a little bit of background about this war that took place between 1914 and 1918 and ended on through an armistice on the 11th of November 1918, which tomorrow will be the 100th anniversary of the end of that war. And so our question for those that just joined us is, what can we, the citizens of this great democratic republic, do to prevent World War III as we commemorate the end of World War I tomorrow, which was erroneously called the war to end all wars? We want to welcome our guests that have joined us on the telephone conference line, and we want to welcome our guests that have also joined us via the internet. And so we want to first of all say welcome to you, Mr. Pianchi. We see that you actually were the first to join us. And then we also have another caller, and I'll let you announce yourself if you choose to do so. But first of all, Mr. Pianchi, welcome, and how are you this evening? And just give me a second so I can turn on your mic. Okay, how are you this evening, Mr. Pianchi?
Doing fine, Mr. Washington.
Okay, I hope
the Bayou country, chilly. But other than that,
it's starting to get chilly in Missouri. Are you there? Is it starting to get a little cold?
No, I'm down in the Bayou country.
Oh, you said the Bayou. It's down cold down there, a little cold down there too, huh? We've had mild weather here in Georgia. Maybe something's coming up from the Gulf that's causing a little chill down there. But it's been relatively warm, not really hot, but a little comfortable actually here in Augusta, Georgia. But I hope that you're bundled up and that you're from an area that normally does experience some cold. So I guess it doesn't bother you to have a little chill, does it?
No, it doesn't bother me that much. It's probably better here than it is up there in Missouri.
Yeah. So anyway, we welcome you tonight. We're always glad to hear your voice on the program. And then for our other caller, again, I'm going to leave it up to you to identify yourself if you would like to. But how are you doing this evening? And that's our caller from the Atlanta area. You may have left the phone for just a minute, but I'll just call you out again. This is our caller from the Atlanta area, whose last three digits of your number are 771. If you can hear me, how are you doing this evening? Okay, you may not
I'm
hear
sorry.
Me. So
can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. I didn't want to identify you. I'll let you take the option to identify yourself you would.
This is Judy, and I'm happy to talk to Mr. Pianke and you, Mr. Washington. Hope you all are enjoying this Saturday evening.
Yes, it's been a good day for me. I've really enjoyed my day, and I hope you've enjoyed yours as well.
I have, and actually, I don't know about Augusta, but I think it's supposed to be a cold spell here in Atlanta, maybe in the 30s sometimes this evening or tonight. So we're getting a lot of cold weather as well.
Yeah, I saw where it was going to drop drastically this evening, but I was outside just a little while earlier today with just a sweater on, and I wasn't uncomfortable at all. But I did see where it's going to get down in the high 30s later tonight. But anyway, you heard the topic, I believe.
I also said hello to Mr. Pianke. I didn't get I may not be pronouncing his name correctly, but I was saying good evening to you as well.
Well, I appreciate it. Hopefully that you're doing well yourself.
Thank you.
Well, let me go ahead and get the conversation started. I think both of you are familiar with the topic. I will announce it again, Judy, if you would like. But if not, let's go ahead and see what your thoughts are. We had a little background, Judy, before you came on the line about the World War One, since we'll be commemorating the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One tomorrow, November the 11th. But just to summarize what I said, that by the end of the First World War, an estimated 10 million soldiers and uncounted millions of civilians had perished. And during this war, there were other countries involved. The United States came in late in the war, actually in the spring of 1918. But the powers which were known as the Allies were at war with the Central Powers. The Allies included Britain, France, Russia, and Japan, and they were at war with the Central Powers, which included Germany, Austria-Hungary, and the Ottoman Empire, whose holdings included modern-day Turkey and much of the Middle East. And as I said, an estimated 10 million soldiers were killed during this four-year period, and uncounted millions of civilians were killed. And so what we're going to talk about tonight is what can we, the citizens of this great democratic republic, that's the United States of America, do to prevent World War III as we commemorate the end of World War I tomorrow, which was erroneously called the War to End All Wars. And so, Bianca, you had actually come on board first, so let's hear from you first. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I think that one way to prevent the next possibility of a WW3 is to make sure that the United States remain militarily powerful. It established deterrence. And everything else that comes behind that, if you're not a strong country, especially in the position that this country is, that we have so much assets, you have a lot of things, a lot of privileges, technology and the like that others don't have. So it's very important that you maintain a strong military force. Like Teddy Roosevelt said, speak softly but carry a big stick. And to speak softly is to engage in cooperation in trade, cooperation in humanitarian aid, be persistent and thorough and firm. Don't let yourself be misused and overran and taken advantage of. So that would be a front formula to the answer to your question. That could get into better depth, but I think that there should give a general idea of what needs to be done.
Okay, well, we should thank you for that input. And Judy, what's your opinion? What do you think?
Well, I'll tell you, I don't have a whole lot to say in regards to the war and prevention of war because I'm not as familiar with World War I as I should with my history. But I would only just in haven't had a chance to think deeply about it, but I would think if we had better communications with the UN representatives and countries that are, you know, represented with the UN and the more peace talks and ways to look at how we can work together collaboratively and cooperatively, you know, across the globe. I mean, that's kind of just a general broad answer, but that's kind of all I could really say in regards to that for right now.
Okay, no. Well, let me just, okay, go ahead, Judy, I'm sorry.
No, that was all that I kind of wanted to say. I just think that we need to be looking at more, I guess I'm going to look at a more ideal situation that we should be looking more towards, yeah, just working together and learning how to communicate so that we can look at the survival of the globe and how we can better, you know, work together and keep the globe from being destroyed.
Okay. Well, great. Let me just go ahead and chime in then. We are waiting for others who may want to join in, but it's right now just the trio of us. But I'd like to just say this. When I was a military cadet back in the 50s, not even a decade after the Korean War, which was really called a police action, but it was a full-scale war on the peninsula of Korea, and hundreds of thousands of people were killed, mostly Koreans, but there were a goodly number of Americans that were killed, and I say most Koreans, but also Chinese communists that fought on the side of North Korea. You know, there had been quite a bit of conversation in the United Nations about trying to keep a peaceful planet, but that did not stop the North Koreans from invading South Korea to try to unite the two Koreas. They were actually backed by the Russians and later by the Chinese, even though a lot of talk had been done in the United Nations to try to that war from happening. The Russians and the North Koreans were determined to try to basically push the United States off of the peninsula so that they could unify Korea under the communist rule. Later, not much later, but a few years later, the United States went in to try to replace the French, who had lost a revolutionary-type war against the Vietnamese people. The French had dominated Vietnam for many years, and under the revolutionary leaders, including Ho Chi Minh, they were able to force the French to give up their fight to hold on to Vietnam, and the United States decided to take the take the French government's place in Vietnam. And, of course, that was the period of time that I was originally in the service. I didn't go to Vietnam, but I was actually trained for the war in Vietnam. And over 53,000 Americans and countless hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Vietnamese people were killed. I'm saying all this to say that in spite of the United Nations presence and in spite of the desire after World War One and World War Two not to have another bloodbath planet, it still happens. And now we're in a post-Cold War era that seems to be heating up again as the Chinese become more powerful. They've built submarines that are now, like the Russians, beginning to be a threat to the United States coast, and especially over in the Pacific. The Chinese are trying to establish their naval power. And so my point is that it seems that on the side of Mr. Pianki, the United States is being forced to reactivate many of its dormant nuclear submarines that have been dormant for the last 20 years to combat the Russian and the Chinese threats. In addition to that, there are new high-powered drones coming off of the assembly plants, as well as, supersonic bombers, et cetera. And now we're getting ready to go into another phase, which is called space war. The president wants to establish a space command by which we'll have actually planes that will fly. I'd say planes, guided rockets that will fly from space stations, attack any point on the globe with nuclear weapons, et cetera. So my thought personally, as I conclude my little remarks, is that as nations like Russia, North Korea, and China and the United States compete for military dominance, it seems to me, with all due respect to Mr. Bianchi's opinion, that rather than war being deterred, it looks like that we're actually getting a more of a hair trigger than we've ever had before. And it just will probably take one incident, the wrong place at the wrong time, to get this thing started up, which we don't want to see, but which almost seems to be inevitable, called World War III. I know I said a mouthful, but in deference to you, Judy, I think that the communication, I think the talking, I think the peace talks would be fine if everybody came to the table in good faith. But just as you see what's recently been happening in North Korea, the North Koreans did not negotiate. I won't say they even attempted to negotiate, but they did not parlay with the United States president in good faith. He left with a quasi promise that they would denuclearize their arsenal. That is not happening, and it will not happen. I don't see it happening anyway. So it seems like all this nice talking is just not going to really change the paradigm that's pointed us in the direction of war. I know I said a lot, but basically what I'm saying is that I think some other steps need to be taken. I think we do need to remain strong militarily. I think we do need to talk, but there's something missing from the equation. I don't know what to tell you it is, but something needs to be done. I'm sure.
I would like to jump in for just a minute.
Yeah, go ahead, Judy.
Marshall, I would like to yield this conversation to the two of you and others who may join, because I'd like to sit back and listen and not participate in the actual conversation, because I don't know very much about the war or the efforts to stop war. So it'll be a learning experience for me tonight, and I'll just, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and just listen and allow you guys to talk about it.
You are always welcome to do that. And if you want to keep the phone line free, you can always go up on the internet, if you want to just listen, just go to Blog Talk Radio, Booker T. Washington Speaks, and you can listen. And that way your phone line won't be
taken.
Yeah,
okay,
that's fine.
And I will continue listening, but also I'm going to yield it over to you two gentlemen. Thank you, and have an enjoyable evening. It's a great topic, and I'm looking forward to learning a lot tonight.
Okay, Judy, that's fine. I see that.
Okay.
I see it's just you and myself, Mr. Bianchi. We might not, because Judy's going to just listen. She said she's not well enough informed on the war situation to be contributing, so she just wants to listen. So just you and myself, and certainly what you said makes a lot of sense. Me being a military professional, I have to back up your position. I certainly wouldn't want to be in defective in terms of preparation to meet any threat that we would have to deal with. So I believe in a strong military situation for our country. But I wonder if not, military power, if there's some other option, too, that can go along with it. That will help us prevent the Third World War. That's my concern.
Well, the military is the deterrent. In other words, if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back harder. Now, being that we both know that, then let's go about the business of running our societies, providing for our societies. I have no fear in North Korea. North Korea is not going to go anyplace. United States, a carrier group could take that country out in 45 minutes. Russia is not going to get into a war, or United States is not going to get into a war with Russia. Russia has submarines offshore in the Atlantic, the Pacific, and probably in the Gulf, too. That has enough firepower to destroy the United States and vice versa. China don't have a blue seas navy. They have a standard army, but they can't project that army unprotected around the world. They just don't have a navy. It doesn't have any aircraft carriers. I think they got one. And they would be vulnerable. So I don't think it's going to be any war. The war that you probably see would be economic wars. I think the things that this president is doing in order to stop America from being used as a dumping ground and get back to the level of exportation, production as it was at one point in time. You know, if you look around the world, the United States, it was Americans that built railroads in other countries. Down in Central America, Peru, Ecuador, you had the British that built railroads, not only in Africa, but also in India. Some of them countries would still be transporting on the back of mules, as far as Peru is concerned, would be llamas, and llamas don't like to carry nothing. So that was a sharing of technology that helped those countries to advance to much further than what they would have if they hadn't been without it. So I think you have good relationships, fairness, in the way that you conduct and transact business, the respect of people's borders. And I think that Donald Trump is doing the right thing by getting out of the business of other nations. At this point in time in history, they should have the ability to solve their own problems. You got these caravans. You remember that Eric Holder and the Obama administration engaged in a program called Fast and Furious, where weapons was made for factions in South America under some pretense that they had the weapons marked some way or another, whereas they could keep track of them. I don't know how that would ever work, but do you think that possibly that these are the weapons that are being used by these criminal factions that's causing havoc that those that are leaving the country are using as an excuse? I don't think so. I think those countries have a military. You mean to tell them that you got street gangs that can overrun? In the case of Honduras, they have, what, 86,000 men, a prepared military, and about another 200-some-odd thousand that's capable. But anyway, no, I think that having a strong, deterrent military, well-trained, well-supplied, is one of your greatest solutions for preventing any further wars.
Okay, well, thank you. We're not going to go very long tonight. I don't have a lot to say on the topic, except that I have recently been reading a lot of military novels by an author that likes to write about cyber warfare, not cyber warfare, but space warfare, and the use of robot soldiers and supersonic space-type bomber planes. I don't mean supersonic. I actually mean bomber planes that operate from space stations. And this war concept is basically between Russia and the United States. This particular writer doesn't write too much about the Chinese, but he writes a lot about Russia and America fighting with these high-tech weapons. And frankly, I unfortunately do see that happening. The thing is that I do also see that these powerful nations will engage in what's called tactical nuclear warfare. Tactical nuclear warfare, according to this particular author, is whereas instead of a nation like Russia, for an example, we're talking mainly about America and Russia, trying to take out the whole American population, they'll just take out maybe one or two cities, you know, and incinerate somewhere on an average of 15 to 20 million people at a time, and America will retaliate in kind and do the same thing. And then the two countries, because of trying to recover from this mass destruction, this mass slaughter, will meet and try to negotiate some type of treaty, which may last for a few years, and then they'll get back at it again while we build up some more super weapons. So I think we are actually facing a future. Hopefully I won't be around to see it, but I think America's facing a future where Russia will attack us and we'll lose millions of people within seconds, and then we'll retaliate, and the same thing will happen to Russia. And you can say that may not be accurately called World War III, because mostly it'll just be these two nations involved. But I think it will have a reverberating effect on the world to know that any country has lost tens of millions of people in instance, in seconds or minutes. I think that's going to cause the economic world economic system to basically be destroyed, at least temporarily. So I think that in that sense, World War III is on the horizon. What are your thoughts about what I just said?
Well, as I said before, I don't think that Russia is going to attack the United States. I don't think they have a reason for it. They got their hands full making money in areas of the world supplying gas. Russia has a very large reserve. They have gold supply. I think they have more gold supply than any other continent, any other country. Their continent, their land mass have more gold than what Africa has. So you got India. I was reading the Goldman Sachs article where they say that in the future, Nigeria is going to have the largest economy in the world. So if Nigeria gets to the point where they have that economic might, guess what? They're going to have to build a military in order to protect their interests for their citizens and also their interests with their allies, whoever they may be.
Well, that's an interesting prospect, and I can see that, actually. I certainly can see that. But in the meantime, I believe that all of the signs seem to be pointing to more outbreaks of war, whether it's Russia or clients of Russia. I think that throughout the world, we're going to see more and more people being invaded by other nations, and I'm not just talking about people like the ISIS people, but armies that are facing each other now, you know, across borders. Various factors will cause them to start engaging in shooting, dropping bombs on each other. And I just feel that even though Russia and the United States may not go at it head on, I think that those two powerful nations will use their client states to continue to try to expand their hegemony, their power bases throughout the world. And it may not be called World War III, but I think over the next 50 years, and to some, 50 years may seem like a very long time, but to me, 50 years is just like yesterday. I'm not saying I'm an ancient, you know, mariner or somebody that's got a lot of years on me, but, you know, I was actually over 50 years ago just being separated from the United States Armed Services with a honorable discharge after having spent 6 years in the U.S. Army. And it seems like just yesterday, it's the Vietnam era. And so I'm just saying that in the next 50 years, I think we're going to have not just something like Vietnam. I don't know if we're going to be unwise enough to get involved in that, except that we are somewhat involved like that in Afghanistan. But I think that we're going to actually be moving towards some type of tactical nuclear warfare. But anyway, I'm going to give you the last word, but I just want to make this announcement, and I won't say any more after you have the last word, Mr. Bianchi, because you and I are the only ones on tonight. Maybe the topic didn't attract too many others. But the fact is I thought it was something, since tomorrow's 100th anniversary of the armistice, that we could engage in a conversation about. But I do want to make the announcement to all that are listening is that we're not going to have a show next week. I've got a very important engagement that I have to attend during the time that we normally would have the show. And so I will not be available to host the show. So we will resume the following week, however, God willing. But just next Saturday, we will not broadcast next Saturday. But having said that, would you like to make any closing comments, Ms. Bianchi?
Well, I was just reiterating that article. It says Nigeria is the largest economy in Africa. And according to Goldman Sachs, one of the next 11 countries with a high potential of becoming among the world's largest economies in the 21st century. So if countries like that that's going to have to build up their military, they're going to need technology, they're going to need weapons. Matter of fact, it's business opportunities, providing them with the infrastructure and the resources that they need in order to protect themselves, either software or hardware. So as nations begin to come on board, become self-sufficient, able to sustain themselves, and then once they reach the plateau, they have to be able to protect themselves. And all along the way, that is business opportunities that people in the U.S., African Americans in particular, you're talking about Nigeria, should be preparing yourself, coming up with plans, doing analysis, obtaining data. Well, these opportunities can be taken advantage of. But with that, I'll have to say good evening.
Okay, good evening to you. And before we close out, I do want to thank you for sending me the links. I did receive them. And so I appreciate that, you know, that gift of you sending me those links last week. And I hope that you have a very good rest of the weekend and enjoy, you know, being down in that area where you are. And we'll look forward, not this coming, next Saturday rather, but the following Saturday, to joining with you again on the African-American Family Room Forum. So until then, best wishes to you, Mr. Bianchi, and best wishes to all of our listeners. And we thank you for participating in Booker T. Washington's African-American Family Room Forum. And with that, we close out with good night and God bless.